This is East Carolina Offensive Coordinator Donnie Kirkpatrick. We are talking one of my favorite things, Pirate football, and the Sports Objective.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective. You know, sometimes my grandfather used to say, you're better lucky than good. In this particular case, we've got a special show, and would you know it, there's talk of SMU going to the ACC. We'll talk about that with our guests. First of all, welcome into the Iron Man, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. You do more shows, and here you are with us tonight. Appreciate you, bro.
Nah, the Iron Man is anybody's above. But I appreciate it, Dave. Been a long day, and not so much from doing the shows, just a long day in general. But anyway, ready for week zero to get started, ready for some college football to be on the television. Saturday, we got 7 college football games, and I'll be trying to watch every one of them. But what's going on, Bubba Rosenbaum?
We have previewed 11 opponents, and this will make number 12. We're taking a look at the SMU Mustangs, and very excited to welcome back to the show from On the Pony Express, part of the On3 Sports Network, Billy Embody. Billy, we appreciate your time this evening.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, we planned on having you on, and then obviously it's crazy, but you guys have a chance, and we understand that. We'll let Kyle talk about that because he just told us right in the green room. But what are you guys hearing before we talk X's and O's? The big story is out of the Dallas area for SMU going to the ACC potentially.
Yeah, this is something that, quite honestly, I've been tracking for a year now. You know, the Pac-12 is what kind of put all this into motion with USC right. and UCLA leaving about a year ago. But talking with SMU sources, they've been hunting for a Power 5 conference, no matter the conference, for a while now. And a lot of it centered around the Pac-12, and especially once George Kliavkov, you know, visited SMU's campus and that whole public exercise, I guess, if you want to call it, happened. The buzz was around that happening, but SMU continued to work the Big 12, which is and was a pipe dream because of some of the roadblocks with the in-state schools there. But the ACC was quietly a league that, you know, there were conversations behind closed doors, especially heating up probably over the last 3 to 4 months, where, you know, SMU and the ACC and some of those schools were in contact at least once a week saying, hey, here's where we're at with the Pac-12. Looks like if they do expand, we're going to be in. What say you? Let's try to make something happen, because the ACC is what SMU's coveted. You know, they feel like they align with a lot of the schools there. I know it's kind of different geographically in a way, but with the new age of realignment, I mean, you can kind of throw geography out of the window as much as I hate it, because I love the regional aspect of conferences. But, you know, SMU is really honed in on working this. And, you know, while the Pac-12 continued to drag things on, SMU went into overdrive on the ACC. And I don't sit here saying it's going to happen and it's going to pan out, but this is the closest we've seen this be since it really formally broke, that they were in discussions and then the Pac-12, lack of a better term, folded. And, you know, this is one of those things that they've just been working toward, and they've never been told no. They've never been told go away. They've been kept right in the loop on maybe what's next for the conference and if SMU might be a part of that.
Yeah, and I was told earlier tonight, speaking to somebody who has direct contacts with somebody with CBS and their SMU contacts and contacts of the ACC, the four no's, I think everybody knows now, were Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, North Carolina State. And it looks like North Carolina State may be the one that flips. That's not a guarantee. But if it happens, it's going to be NC State, it sounds like. So time will tell. I got a couple of follow-up questions on that. First one, it's being reported that you guys are willing to give up 7 years of media rights deals to join the ACC. Obviously, SMU has a lot of money, and there would be a lot of other revenue coming in from the ACC, such as, you know, from bowl games, the playoff, NCAA tournament money. So do you guys think that revenue from the other revenue distributions through the ACC would equal to what the American media rights equal to for that 7-year period?
You know, the interesting thing about all this is there's a couple of different points to it. One, as SMU has been going through some of the realignment discussions with multiple leagues over the last, you know, year especially, but they've been building toward this for 2 to 3 years now, is they have a fund called the Vision 2025 Fund. And it's earmarked for when SMU gets to a Power Five league. And it's probably in the $5 to $10 million range of just money that's kind of sitting there right now. So that is designed to pay coaches, up those salaries to a Power Five level of compensation, do whatever they need to off the field to make everything, you know, whole in a sense in terms of what Power Five, or I guess Power Four teams should be right. doing these days. But so they have that, which they've really set aside. And then the donors that are really involved with the football program have pledged to make up the difference between that lost AAC revenue of about $7 million a year, plus the exit fee, which when you factor in what will probably be a $17 million exit fee, along with $7 million a year for 7 years is what it looks like they're going to give up. It's going to be about a $70 million, you know, amount of money that they're going to foot the bill for in terms of making sure that the athletic department doesn't see that money just flat out disappear while they go through this. But then there's also that piece of attendance going up when ACC opponents come to town. There's the piece of advertising in the stadium that maybe is worth a little bit more. There's the piece of apparel going up. But the biggest piece is, and a lot of SMU people have said this, you know, we have a lot of people that want to give, but they don't want to give to a G5 program. We've got millions of dollars lined up in major gifts as soon as SMU gets in to a Power Five conference. And I think that's where you'll see the difference ultimately made up.
Is that alumni or businesses or what?
Yeah, alumni. So
that is the most idiotic thing I've ever heard in my life.
Trust me, I agree with you. I think the one thing about SMU is it's, unfortunately for the program since the death penalty, it has been kind of wandering in the desert in a sense since then. But over the last...
So if donors were to spend that money 20 years ago, you might not be wandering right now.
Yeah, it's so these are probably the, from what I've gathered, that what we call around SMU, kind of that forgotten generation where they didn't go to school football or they missed out on any sort of football. And there's probably a 5 to 10 year window of SMU alums that football was just not a thing. You went to SMU to go to good school and be in Dallas, and that was kind of it. And so it's been a process as those people have grown up and are now in their late 40s, up to mid 50s and things like that, where they have this extra money sitting around and now they can give it to a school that could be in the Power Five ranks. So it's a weird situation because of that. But trust me, I agree with you. The one thing about the hindsight situation with SMU is the president, Dr. Turner, he, regardless if he gets this right this time, he botched this about 20 years ago when TCU was investing in football and investing in being great and all of those things in athletics. He was saying, no, SMU, we're going to double down in academics, and that's what we're going to be built on, and we'll figure out the football aspect of it as we go. And now you see where the two athletic departments are and programs are overall. But, you know, SMU has been that sleeping giant, and I think a lot of people have just been waiting for it to wake up.
Yeah, and even if you don't get into the ACC, in the American now, particularly if they, you know, and I think there's a lot of people worried about with the playoff format that they're not going to, that the change is going to eliminate the conference champion rule that was supposed to be into effect, where the 5 highest rated conference champions make the playoffs, or the 6 highest rated conference champions make the playoff, I'm sorry, and then 6 at large. I think it's going to just change to the 5 highest rated conference champions. So I still think you're going to see one group of 5 team get in. My point being, with the money SMU has in the day and age of NIL, even if you don't get into the ACC, you stay in the American. If you spend that NIL money, you guys could dominate the American. Hope you don't, because, you know, I'd like to play for some championships. But you guys could dominate the American if you spent that money now and get to the playoffs every year, as long as they keep that access that we're supposed to get started in 24.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yep. It's something that, you know, with the NIL investment that they've done, I mean, there's a reason why. Look, the preseason poll, I get it, Tulane, UTSA, what they did last year and what they built at those two programs is really impressive, and they deserve the kudos. But trust me, there are going to be a lot of ticked off people around SMU with the amount of money that they've spent in NIL and just over the last few years if SMU is not playing that first weekend of December.
Speaking of ticked off people around SMU, if you guys get in the ACC, there'll be a lot of ticked off people around SMU October 12th. I guarantee you that when you come to North Carolina. I know you guys will be more than happy to deal with that if it happens. The last question I had about realignment, I don't know if Dave Bubba has anything.
I do.
This is just a general, well, it's a two-part question. If Cal and Stanford get in and SMU doesn't, what do you think the chances are at that point of Washington State and Oregon State coming to the American versus the Mountain West? That's the first part. And then two, if you guys do get in the ACC, do you think that affects Oregon State and Washington State coming to the American negatively? Do you think if you guys go to the ACC that Oregon State, Washington State at that point would definitely go to the Mountain West?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer just because I mean, I'm like you guys, I just don't track those two schools to know what their thinking is. Like for a lot of people that follow realignment and have for over the last year, you would have thought by all the storylines that SMU is gunning for the Pac-12 and that's their best bet and that's what they want and all of those things. They've always wanted the ACC. You know, the Big 12 made a lot of sense, but there's also a lot of people around SMU that are, you know, kind of like, all right, forget those in-state schools for lack of, all the curse words you can think of, that's how they feel about Baylor, Tech, Houston, TCU, all of those schools. And their whole mindset was the ACC is the best fit and gets them into the Eastern time zone, things like that. So when it comes to Oregon State and Washington State, it's hard for me to really get a feel for what they would do. I think the most stable league is still the American. I think, you know, the ability of this league to put teams, especially as of late, at the top of the poll in terms of being in that college football playoff discussion. I know the league has changed and all those things, but the infrastructure with ESPN is there. This is, you know, still a league that, you know, has a lot of respected teams in it. And at least from what I'm kind of seeing nationally, as we throw away regional, you know, allegiances in a sense with realignment, is you would think Oregon State and Washington State would say, all right, we're going to stay out on the Mountain West and do our thing out here out west. But is that the right thing to stay out in the Pacific time zone and kind of wither away like the Pac-12 is already doing? I don't know if that's the case. Now, granted, it adds an incredible amount of travel. And you know, I cover LSU as well for On3, and I always hear about getting up to Corvallis for LSU fans whenever they've had to play baseball up there. It is a pain. And as much as I want to see a game in Pullman, it's a pain. But for those two schools, to get east is probably their best bet of survival at the highest level, which is kind of what I fall back on.
That was my question, is the very fact of, you're talking about SMU. I understand the P5, P4 deal now, but at the same time, Kyle makes a great point, Billy. You know, you look at Florida State, Clemson, there's a lot of schools in the ACC that you're going to have to go through. The same thing if you were in the Big 10, Big 12, American, you have a really shot of winning a championship and getting in the playoffs. So that's why I'm confused on and then not having money for 7 years. That's a lot of, I know that no, you guys have money, but that's a long time.
You go if you get the opportunity. My point was, if I'm the people at SMU that are thinking about investing, if I don't get in the ACC, that wouldn't change my mind.
Yeah, it's and this is where SMU is complicated in a sense, because you have these donors at the top that donate for facilities. They don't, they run the coaching contracts. There's, you know, one at the top of football right now who built the indoor facility, Bill Armstrong, and has been very generous on the football front. And then there's a group of probably, I would say, roughly five that really, you know, carry the torch right under him. But with the NIL, it's a lot of, you know, people who are good SMU donors and supporters, but they want to give to acquiring players or keeping players and going out and winning on that level at the highest that they can. And those people have, you know, really been the ones that have championed the NIL movement. And I mean, now you've got two collectives that are, I mean, we just did before the season, the top 20 ambitious, most ambitious collectives nationally, and SMU is the only G5 in there. And they're above some big names. And, you know, so it's built where you don't have the big, big donors having to foot the bill for everything. And they're just getting hit up left and right. Like, those guys don't deal with NIL much at all. And so it's a very unique, or at least I think it could be unique. I'm not sure on other schools, but it sounds like it's unique in that sense, where you have people that it's probably, you know, anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $100,000 a year, but it's probably a group of about 40 to 50 people that are involved. And when there's an opportunity to go out and get a really talented transfer, or very rarely they do the high school front, but when they have the opportunities, it's passing around the hat a little bit, but there's a lot of people that are already committed to saying, okay, I'm good for X number of dollars this year. If you hear of something that we need to do to stretch it, give me a call. And that's kind of how it's structured, which is sustainable, whether it's in the American or whether it's in the ACC, because of that. Those people are giving, you know, a set amount of money to the school, and it's probably not going to go up and reach that level of the millions. And they're content to give the NIL and be very involved in that respect.
Yeah, and one more thing on this, unless one of the other guys do, then we'll move on to talk about the 2023 SMU football team. But do you, it's kind of comical in a way, but do you guys see this as kind of almost the ultimate redemption story, where you guys, you know, got the death penalty for paying players, and now that it's legal to pay players, you guys potentially, if you move up to the ACC, get to step back into a power conference like the Southwestern Conference used to be, where it's kind of almost like a big FU to the NCAA comes full circle.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A lot of people view it like that. And it's like I use the term wandering in the desert. It's been a long time to even get back to the point where, you know, SMU was in the top 25 here and there under Sonny Dykes. They, you know, last year, I think the early losses in non-conference really hurt that buzz to potentially get there. But this was a team that finished 5-2 over their last seven. And they didn't have Rashee Rice in that bowl game. They lost by a point to BYU. And, you know, BYU was down a few players, I think, as well. But I think it's a program where people are ready to finally kick that door down and be back to where, no matter, and I don't want to say no matter, but for the most part, no matter what happens on the field, you're a part of the club of the Power Five ranks. And that's important. Especially in Dallas, you've got so many different alumni bases, and especially all the different Texas schools, you know, to have a team that has the amount of money to go out and get good players and have a team that should be competing for a conference championship year in, year out, for them to have that, but then get a Power Four or whatever conference, that would be the icing on the cake. Whereas anything SMU does right now, even if they beat a TCU, it's, well, you're still relegated to the group of five, or, oh, it's, you know, you caught us when we, you know, lost everybody off the national championship appearance. That would be kind of the storyline. Whereas this is a program that is built up I mean, even Chad Morris, he kind of got the ball rolling a little bit, and then Sonny and the portal picked it up and ran with it, and Rhett Lashley and Sonny Dykes leaving, you know, that really motivated a lot of SMU boosters to put the gas pedal down, and they were ticked off. And honestly, this is, you know, not even a FU to the NCAA. It's more so of an FU to Sonny Dykes in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, TCU just hit pause on the series. It's ending after the 2025 game, but there's a lot of SMU people that want to make it three straight and get out of there with the iron skillet and, you know, leave Sonny Dykes with that taste in his mouth.
Yeah, at some point, and then we really will move on and talk about 2023 football, but at some point the East Carolinas of the world, our administrations have got to have a set of cojones and sue some people for antitrust, because this whole Power Five narrative, and prior to that BCS narrative, if it don't violate antitrust law, I mean, I'm no lawyer, but I play one on a podcast. At some point, what do you have to lose? And I think it's getting to be about nut cutting time.
Well,
good.
Yeah, I was just going to say, also, this just shows, sorry if I put the administration down at ECU, but my frustration is we are literally in
it's
the
not foot. Just us. It's not just us.
ACC. Yeah. And no offense, Billy, because you guys are doing what's best for you guys or, you know, for your school. But I'm just frustrated that what it comes down to is small school mentality. That's what our leadership has. A school like, this is what our athletic director recently said, a school like the size of ECU. Well, we have 30,000 students. And we, like I said, every game that an ACC school comes to us or we go to them that's regional, you know, like Tobacco Road, or if it's in Virginia, even if we played, say, Clemson, they're going to probably sell out anyway. But, I mean, it's just one of those things that's very frustrating. But it comes down to leadership. It comes down to us putting ourselves out there. And the only way that we're going to have a chance now is we're going to have to go 12-0 like 3 or 4 years in a row before anybody takes notice of us, because they're always going to use an excuse of you don't have a big enough market. Well, you're in the ACC country, but they already have 4 schools in North Carolina, so we're not going to take another one. There's always an excuse. So I'm just wondering, like, there's some people that want to go to the Sun Belt, and they want to go to, I mean, at some point, I guess they want to go FCS. And our,
I don't think it's about, I don't think it's about that, Dave. I think it's just they get frustrated, and they see if we're going to not make it to a so-called power conference, they would just rather have fun and it be regional. I mean, you got to admit it certainly, you know, money aside, if you're not in a power conference, it's certainly a lot more fun to play Appalachian State, Marshall, than it is to play UTSA and even SMU, honestly. It just, there's not a lot of interest there. So, I mean, it'll be what it'll be. We'll be all right no matter what happens. But anyway, let's talk about 2023 SMU football. Bubba, you want to take that? You're more the X's and O guy. You want to take that lead?
Well, we don't have Bubba right now, so she would
be. Okay, we're just going to pitch it to Billy. Billy, SMU's got a lot coming back off last year's team. You guys, you mentioned you were a bowl team last year. Lost to BYU in your bowl game. You picked anywhere from you know, depending on the publication, second or third in the conference. There might have been one publication out there that had you guys winning the league. But all the publications have you guys at the top of the league, along with UTSA and Tulane. So let's start off with SMU on the offensive side of the ball. Just tell us what you got coming back. We'll start at the quarterback position and go from there.
Yeah, SMU, if they figure it out with Preston Stone at the helm at quarterback, they're going to be one of the best offenses in the country. And he is a former highly touted 4-star prospect. He's an SMU legacy from Dallas. And, you know, when SMU reeled him in, that was a big, big deal. And Rhett Lashley recruited him and then never coached him because he went to Miami and then winds up, you know, coming back to SMU to be the head coach. And Tanner Mordecai did a lot of good things over the last 2 years, but they had some honest conversations. And I think Tanner Mordecai, once he realized his draft situation, he opted to go transfer and obviously going to Wisconsin. He's going to start there. But Preston Stone is a guy that since he stepped on campus, he's had this moxie about him, and he's really gotten more comfortable in the offense in terms of what they're asking him to do. I feel like when he came in, he probably felt a little bit of the weight of his weight of the world on his shoulders, just because he was so highly touted, SMU legacy, things like that. But he has so many playmakers around him. They've got Jordan Curley and Jake Bailey who are back, who are healthy, which is important. Both of those guys have been, honestly, go back and look at, you know, what they've done when they're healthy. They're two of the better receivers in this league. And for them to be healthy and ready to go is huge, just off the jump. And then you have another slot in Roderick Daniels, who did just about everything for SMU down the stretch last year. And he's back, and they're really high on him. But then they brought in a bunch of transfers for really that other outside receiver spot, and then to also get some snaps behind Jordan Curley. They've got two Miami transfers in Keyshawn Smith and Romello Brinson, both of who are pretty explosive guys, but they've got to be consistent. Moochie Dixon is a returning player for SMU, came on strong at the end of last year. They're really high on him and his development that he's seen this offseason. And then Jordan Hudson, the former five-star who SMU brought in from TCU. He has some pretty incredible gifts just watching him, and he might not be a guy that early this season makes a ton of plays, but I could see him breaking through and being a starter by the year's end. And if they can get those guys to stay healthy and do what they think they can do, they're going to be pretty impressive at the skill position spot again. And they have tight end RJ Maryland, who really was, I think a couple outlets had him as a freshman All-American, and set the SMU single season record for freshman touchdowns by a tight end. And he was second all time in a single season for touchdowns by a tight end. Then you look at running back, they bring back Tyler Levine, and the whole running game changed when he got the ball a little bit more last year. And he played the back half of the season on a partially torn patella tendon, which is pretty insane. He's a former Army prep guy who transferred a few years back into SMU as a walk-on, and he's just been the heart and soul of that really offense. And they've got him. He's healthy. He's ready to go. And Jalen Knighton and LJ Johnson, two highly touted transfers, come into that room, and they've got Velton Gardner and Kamar Wheaton coming back as well. So they've got depth at running back. All those guys have different skill sets, whether it be some explosiveness and pass catching with Jalen Knighton and Velton Gardner. They've got LJ Johnson and Tyler Levine, who are kind of your bruisers. Kamar Wheaton has shown flashes of being great, but he's got to stay healthy. And then you've got an offensive line that has Marcus Bryant, Branson Hickman, and Justin Osborne back as starters. And then they brought in two former Power Five transfers that'll start at left guard, and Logan Parr and Hyron White at right tackle. And they've got some depth on the offensive line too. I mean, they have really addressed that position very well. And so all the pieces are there for SMU to be really, really good offensively. And even their backup quarterback, Kevin Jennings, came in and led a 90-plus yard touchdown drive right before the half against Memphis. He came in for Preston Stone when Preston Stone got hurt at Tulsa and played three quarters and, you know, didn't make mistakes and operated the offense. And they got their first win at Tulsa, I think, in like a decade and a half. So they have a lot of experience. They've got talent. It's got to all come together, of course. But, you know, Preston Stone, he just needs to stay within the offense. And as he gets more comfortable playing as a starter week in, week out, you know, maybe he'll spread his wings a little bit, and then it could be really scary.
So early on, he just needs to be a game manager as he's learning the position at this level. Move over to the other side of the ball, defense. So what do the Ponies look like on the defensive side of the ball for 2023?
Yeah, another transfer-laden group. They brought in 25 transfers overall for this offseason for the team.
Jesus.
And double-digit high school signees. But the defense was really what was addressed. And just kind of off the top of my head, they'll have two transfer corners that'll start. They'll have a transfer safety that'll start. They'll have a transfer linebacker that'll start. And they'll have, depending on how it goes at the edge rusher position, they'll have two of the four or three of the four starters on the defensive line be transfers. And the biggest probably additions were at corner, and SMU has struggled with depth, and they've struggled with kind of high-end athleticism at the corner spot for years now. And they got two guys that they really trust in Chris Meganson from Liberty and Charles Woods from West Virginia. And those two guys have been really good to watch in camp. Charles Woods was a preseason Big 12 selection last year at West Virginia before he got hurt. And if he can stay healthy, they're really high on what he can do. Jonathan McGill is a former Stanford captain, and he was brought in this offseason and was just named a captain at SMU. And he's going to pair with Brian Massey and Brandon Crosley, two returning starters at safety. But they also have a former Fresno State transfer in C.J. Sanders, who's played a ton of football in his first 2 years of college and has done well. They also have Ahmad Moses, who came on strong for them last year as a true freshman. They've got some depth at corner. They brought in two Power 5 transfers in Keyshawn Mills and Jalen Davis Robinson at corner as well to shore up that group that also has returners like Kavaris Hall and A.J. Davis. Defensively on the line, that's where the biggest changes happen. Devere Levelston, who's a multi-year starter for SMU, added 20 pounds. So he looks like a true defensive tackle now rather than a tweener. And then they brought in Elijah Roberts from Miami, who's going to be a strong side defensive end at about 275 pounds. And he was the least talked about Miami transfer that SMU brought in, and he might end up being the best. And then they've got Jordan Miller, a big 330-pound nose tackle, holding it down in the middle. And then Elijah Chapman, who repped out 225-pound reps on the bench press this offseason, is going to be a backup after being a guy who's played a ton of AAC football and was on some all-conference teams here and there. And then the edge rusher spot, they bring back Nelson Paul, who was the team's, I think, fourth leading tackler and was right up there for the top in terms of sacks. But then they brought in Cam Robertson, who was an all-conference USA freshman pick from North Texas. They just have some new depth up front that is – I haven't seen it on the defensive line like this in a few years. And at linebacker, they have Ahmad Walker, who started as a true freshman at Liberty for the defensive coordinator, Scott Simons, when he was there. So he trusts him a lot, and he's in the system now and going to start at middle linebacker. And then they have probably four guys that they'll rotate and figure out who works best at the will linebacker spot. But they've got Chris Adamora, who's a converted safety. They've got Kobe Wilson, who was a Temple transfer, who's played a lot in the AAC. And they've got a returning player in Jaquandus Burns, who's gotten some good amount of time. And then Alex Kilgore, a true freshman who enrolled early that they love. So they've got their place kicker, punter, and long snapper back too, as well as the return guys. So they have to put it all together, and that's been the thing for SMU in terms of their inability at times to kick down the door and have a 10-win season or go make a conference championship game. But all the pieces are in place, quite honestly, for it to happen.
What would you say would be the weakest point of the SMU football team? Corner? What I mean, I was just by what you were saying, maybe linebacker. It sounds like you guys are pretty loaded everywhere.
Yeah, I think the one thing with Rhett Lashley's offense is you need a tight end that can really help in the run game. And Nolan Matthews-Harris is the second tight end behind RJ Maryland, who's more of a pass catcher. But RJ's added about 20 pounds in the offseason, so he's going to try to hold it down a little bit better. But Nolan Matthews-Harris is a big guy who has been able to stay healthy through the spring and the fall for the first time in his career. So we'll see if he can man it. But he's about 6'5", 240 pounds. So they're hoping that he can handle a lot of that. But another thing they did is they actually moved Elijah Chapman into an H-back role. And he's about 5'10", but I mean, like I said, 45 reps of 225. I mean, he's one of the strongest guys. He was on Bruce Feldman's freaks list that came out this year. He was on it last year too. And they're really high on his ability to maybe move the pile and create some space in the run game. So they're going to use him a good bit too. So I would say kind of tight end, H-back, a little bit of depth situation there. And then linebacker, just from the standpoint of they have Jaquandus Burns, who's back from last year, but he didn't necessarily, at least from what I've seen, take the starting role and really run with it. And so they're kind of waiting to see if he can do that. And then outside of that, you have all new faces at linebacker. So that's just more of a question right now, and we'll see if they can get it answered.
No doubt about it, Billy. It's exciting for you guys. In fact, I saw an article just now that has you still going to a new version of the Pac-12. That's crazy. So I guess it's like the pretty girl at school to get a date to the prom. Everybody wants to be your date. So that was cool. I just read that about they had a new version of the Pac-12, 12 teams in there, and one of them was SMU. So I think that's old news, but anyway. Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I see that you need to run. We appreciate you very much for coming on. And tell everybody how they can get in touch with you as far as social media and your work.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. You can check us out at ontheponyexpress.com. We're also on the Pony Express YouTube channel doing a bunch of podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter at SMUon3, the number 3, or at Billy Embody on Twitter. Or X, whatever we're calling it now.
I know, it's hard to get used to that. I'm an old dog trying to learn a new trick of saying X. Billy, thank you so much, and we'll be checking in with you, I guess, game week as well.
Great. Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, man. Have a good night.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, I went to check their schedule, but by the time I got back, you were finishing up, so I didn't bother.
Yeah, he needed to run, but anyway, all is good. We had that. In fact, we got all 12 teams in now, and they're in really good shape. You like their chances in the American this year, and I like our chances. I'll tell you what, I'm so excited with the depth we have with our team. So I'm happy that we're going to be in the upper echelon. I feel very confident with our team, and I think it's kind of good that we didn't get picked. I think it's always bad when we get picked. We're favored because a lot of times I don't know if we can not handle the pressure, but I think we do better when we're underrated and then we prove everybody wrong. I kind of like that storyline.
Well, I think if we're ever going to make it to where we want to make it, when we're picked to have a 9-10-12 win season,
right,
we need to start doing it. I don't think we finished, despite what all we had last year, we finished 6th in the conference last year. Now, 3 of those teams are gone, UCF, Cincinnati, Houston. I really don't have a problem being picked 6th in the conference. I did see one place pick us 12th. Which I thought was comical.
Oh my God.
But it was your buddies at the Athletic.
I didn't agree with that.
It was so most, Phil Steele has the 6th. I trust his opinion. I think middle of the pack's a good place for us. We could overachieve. It's gonna really all depend on quarterback. If Garcia or Flynn catches on early, then I think we have that opportunity to be in the upper echelon of the league. If not, then I think we're going to be a middle of the pack team. I think we have a really good chance, as we just talked about on the Just Another Sports podcast, to have a really good defense. We got a lot of depth on the defensive line. We're young in the secondary, but we are more athletic and talented in the secondary than we've been in a long time, despite the youth. And then at linebacker, I think it's about break even. We lost some guys at linebacker. But, Miles Berry, et cetera. But we brought in some quality transfers and some guys that were already in the program and stepped up. So, yep. I think our defense is going to be pretty good. And I think we're going to have a pretty good running game. But as far as, I don't think we're underrated. I think when you look at this league, there's no way you don't have Tulane, SMU, UTSA as the top 3 in whatever order you want to put them in. After that,
I have us 4th. I'm not saying that we're number 1.
Well, I think Memphis has a lot back on offense. Now, can they stop anybody?
That's what I'm talking about. Their defense is not there.
Their offense, they got a returning quarterback. They got pretty much everybody back on offense. Memphis is going to score a lot of points. And then FAU is the big question mark. They're a very talented football team. Tom Herman's a very good coach, but it's his first year there. Can he put it together in year 1 like he did at Houston? Maybe not. So, I could see us finishing as high as, best case scenario, 3rd. I guess best case scenario, win the damn league. But yeah. Realistic best case scenario, 3rd, I could see us finishing as low as 6th or 7th. So, it'll be somewhere in there. I think I will say this, and I hope it doesn't happen because I hope SMU doesn't get in the ACC. But I can tell you this, if SMU gets in the ACC, that Thursday night, I don't care what our record is, if we don't pack that place, and if we ain't as loud and nasty and hostile and mean and venomous and full of piss and vinegar as a fan base and as a football program and as a football team as we possibly can be, then something's wrong with us. If SMU comes into here October 12th as a member of the ACC and we don't pull that off, I don't care if they're ranked in the top 25 at that point, that circle that game, boys and girls. If they get the ACC invite, that's a must win. We have to find a way to make a statement in that game. But I'm hoping that don't happen. I'm hoping they don't get in. But
so we got to call our friends at NC State and say, don't put them in.
Look, we should have been making the phone call to the governor and to people in the UNC system when SMU first started being talked about, that if they're included in any kind of conference invitation to the ACC, that we need to be included also, being there in the same conference. Now, would that have gotten us into the ACC? No, but it would have kept SMU from getting in.
Exactly. And the other thing is just the fact that it just doesn't make any sense with how well we're fundraising and all the things we're doing. We need to be pushing really hard to be in a bigger conference. And I love them. I don't have anything actually against the American, but I don't think we have people that are really, truly trying hard.
Well, unfortunately, it's probably not going to happen. And I think the only way, like you said earlier, that's going to happen is if we go on a big run. Now, I think our best chance now, you know, maybe if those schools don't get into the ACC, if the Pac-12 gets rebuilt, maybe we're included if they keep Power 5 status. Or down the road, if the ACC loses some more schools, then maybe we'll have an opportunity. But it'll be what it'll be, man. We're going to play football, whether it's, you know, whether it's in the American, whether it's in the Sun Belt, whether it's in the American with SMU, whether Washington State and Oregon State. It's going to be very interesting. I really want to see what's going to happen. If it's just Cal and Stanford, I can just about guarantee you Washington State and Oregon State will be coming to the American. If SMU goes with Cal and Stanford to the ACC, then I'm not sure they may. Oregon State, Washington State could end up in the Mountain West. But it would be nice just for a change, even if we don't get the flowers, to at least not get the manure. It would be nice. It would be nice to, you know, if SMU somehow stays in the American, Cal Stanford get in the ACC, and then we get Oregon State, Washington State, and then in 26, Boise State and San Diego State, and we have a real national conference that if we didn't get power status, it would certainly be considered the best group of five conference and should be a playoffs contender, if not getting a playoff team every – if the champion of that league wasn't in the playoffs every year, it would be pretty damn near it.
And another thing they're talking about now is the national media is ACC is the next to implode. And I do agree that that's going to happen at some point, and it'll happen – when you lose Florida State and Clemson, then you've pretty
well. I don't think, Dave, that the league will completely implode because I don't think there's enough room left, unless conferences are going to go to 30 teams. I don't think there's enough room left for the ACC to completely implode, but I do think it could lose an awful lot of teams down the road, and that's when I think we would have a chance to finally get in, probably after it loses power status.
but the very fact that Florida State, I mean, they're doing everything they can. Clemson's taken more of a quieter approach, but really, when you look at Florida State right now, man, they bring a lot. You know, we talk about all that, but Florida State, Clemson, and Notre Dame are the three big prizes left, if you will, if you want to talk about brand names. And I know that Grant of Rights people talk about that, but I still think it may not be tomorrow, but they're going to find there'll be somebody. You were talking about the suing part. There'll be some lawyer that will take a, you know, like a, do like a Hail Mary and find a way out of the Grant of Rights. I don't know how they'll do it. I'm not a lawyer. It's not easy. I know it's extremely difficult for those that have told me, including David Glenn, who is an attorney, who is a regular guest on our show. But I just have a feeling that Florida State is going to find a way out, and then that's when they'll be the team that'll find the way out, and then all the dominoes will start to fall in the ACC.
Well, at some point, if you're Florida State and you want up bad enough, why don't you just leave and tell the ACC to sue me and get tied up in more litigation? And, you know, by the time of judgment, you'll probably settle out of court for significantly less than what the buyout is, and you'll have time to pay it. So if I was Florida State and I wanted to leave, I'd just leave and let them see what happens. But anyway, I personally, as we sit here tonight, I'm still a huge doubting Thomas, if you will.
That's some of you getting in
and Stanford and Cal. I just, you know, maybe they can flip NC State, because NC State's best interest, you know, may be to make sure the ACC stays together. I don't know how much of a chance they have to get into a better conference. I don't know. So the key's going to be NC State. I don't see North Carolina, Clemson, or Florida State changing their mind. So, we need NC State to
hold tight,
to be on our side for once. Either invite Stanford and Cal, or don't invite anybody.
So and I can see that. And that's the thing, is that are they better? And this is my question to the ACC. Are you better off with Stanford and Cal? Because pretty much, I mean, Stanford, I love the fact that they have a whole bunch of Olympic sports. I think that's fantastic. But that's not what we always know that we talk about. That's not what moves the needle. It's football. Their football program hasn't been good in quite a while. Cal, pretty much the same thing. I mean, they may get to a bowl here and there. But
Stanford will be good in football again in the day and age of NIL.
But when it comes to I know the academic piece with ACC – but SMU doesn't really, I mean, no offense to Billy or anybody, I just don't see what those three schools add to the ACC. I like those schools. I have nothing against those schools. I'm just simply saying, when they always say the argument, what does this team bring? Like, how much money could Stanford, Cal, and school in Dallas with SMU bring in? Would it be, you know, an extra, like, in other words, the gap is, like, right now they're saying potentially, what, 30 to 40 million?
I don't think initially they'll bring anything. I don't think they're going to bring any, maybe a little bit of value to their TV. They already get paid. They lie about their TV deal. They're getting $30 million a damn year.
Right.
So or it's $28 million, something like that. That's a lot of money. I wish we had that problem to whine about.
Yeah, exactly.
But I, you know, maybe some value with getting in the Central time zone and the West Coast time zone for television. It might up their TV contract a little bit, but not that much. Right. I think down the road is where you might have potential. SMU being in the ACC with the money they have and in that fertile recruiting area,
right?
They could become a major player down the road. Stanford also, they're in a good recruiting area in California, although it's not as good as it used to be. And they got a lot of money for NIL. So I think at Stanford, they've got some restrictions with recruiting because they're academics. But, yep. You know, Duke and Wake Forest has figured out how to navigate it. And what they do is
Virginia.
Wake Forest in particular is maybe a model Stanford wants to look at, where, you know, they're truly they're more like a Group of Five program in a Power Five league.
Right.
And they develop players. That's what Stanford is probably going to have to do too. But you know, it's really a shame just listen to him talk about SMU and all the transfers they brought in from all these Power Five schools. And you're talking about names here. You're talking about, you know, All American from West Virginia. And it's getting to the point now where literally, if you got money, you can win a football, and that's what it's going to be. And that's kind of the world we're in now. So it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. So,
well, you know, you and I always, you and I especially, are, by the way, are donating to Team Boneyard.
Yep.
And we want to make sure that everybody knows that. And, you know, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum, but Coach Houston's talked about it. I understand that people have this mindset of, I am never going to pay a player, right? But it doesn't matter how, and thank you, Bubba, for those watching right now, live or archive, teamboneyard.org. But Hank and Henry Hinton and everybody with Team Boneyard have done a great job, Kyle, because of the fact that they know that in order to be competitive, we have the par for our league is at least $1 million. And I would say, Kyle, you and I think big like Bubba and Matt the same way. if the par is a million, you need to be raising 3 million. But we have to start somewhere, I know. But
well, here's the thing about Team Boneyard, and people, it needs to be promoted more, first of all. And one thing I'll say, and you know, sometimes I think people don't give because they don't feel like they can give enough to make a difference. And maybe
that's true.
Maybe it's embarrassing to them if people find out that they're giving, but they're only giving this much. Well, you don't have to put your name out there. And if you can't give that, you can join Team Boneyard for $10 a month. You can join for as little as $10 a month.
Netflix, Hulu.
Exactly. And just think about that. Think if every East Carolina fan joined, you know, how much money that would be. So if you go, well, hell, I can't afford to give it. Well, hey, they have a level at $10 a month for a reason. That's because they want your money. Even if you can't afford any more than that, or maybe you can afford a little more than that, but that's just comfortable with what you're spending. You know, you're not going to miss $10 a month. It's not even worth thinking about it. Or maybe $20 a month, whatever you're comfortable with. If you're not set financially to give a big gift, go join for $10 a month. If everybody would do that, it would add up fast. I'll just put it that way. So I encourage everybody to join Team Boneyard.
Bubba is producing in the moment. He says Hank Hinton was asking for more $25 per month donors, $300 annually. That's fine, but we have no problems with that. I'm giving $50 a month. I'll be transparent, and that's the most I can give because, you know, Kyle was talking to an ECU official.
I'll be transparent. I joined at the bottom level, $10 a month right now. And, you know, I may go up to $20 a month. But
yeah,
and I could afford technically to give more than that. But I don't want to push myself too thin. I have bills. My wife has bills. And, you know, I want to participate and give. But I'm not going to sacrifice my own comfort, you know, but $10 a month ain't a freaking sacrifice. I mean, that's one trip to McDonald's by yourself.
Right. It's gotten to be that expensive. And, you know, Kyle is going to say the fact that that's the whole point. The fact that you're giving is important. And we need to respect if it's Team Boneyard or the Pirate Club, if you're giving $10 a month or more, or whatever, then everybody needs to be appreciated because we have a lot of people.
Yeah, that's another thing. Because
of the alums and the fans.
$100 is still the minimum to join the Pirate Club, $100 a year.
Yep.
That's less than $10 a month. So, and I mean, you can do that. You can pay your Pirate Club dues that way. If you want to sign up as a $100 donor and pay it monthly, they'll do it every 12 months.
Yep. You set up a payment plan and do that.
I mean, that's friggin', that's a six piece McNugget. I mean,
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, you might as well join the Pirate Club for $100 a year. Go and pay it out over the year. You ain't got to think about it. What is that? What's 100 divided by 12, Dave? Do you know
eight,
that math?
$9, $8 a month.
There you go. So basically, for $18, you can join the Pirate Club and join Team Boneyard. And there you go.
We got to push. We got to. That's what I was going to say, Kyle. I didn't plan on talking about Team Boneyard or Pirate Club, but we've got to push that end of people. There's the people that we always talk about take showers after work. The common man is what we're missing right now, I think, in the Pirate Club. And you know, it's one of those things where,
and Dave, you give beyond what your income really justifies, to be quite honest. Dave, for those that don't know, without getting into Dave's details of what he gives and what his income is, he gives above and beyond. You know, I give way above the minimum level, but nowhere near to the level Dave gives. And you don't have to be a Dave.
No, I'm not asking for people.
But you can certainly be a me. Look, I'm not going to get into what me and my wife make a year, but we give well above the minimum level. And if we can afford to do it, believe me, a lot of other people can too.
And that's the thing, any amount, as far as if it's $100 or like we talked about for, if you can give $100 a year, and just like we were talking about, if you can give the $10 a month for Boneyard, that's what it's going to take. You want to, and as fans, you know, we can talk about the administration or whatever, but if we really want to get to the next level, then we're going to have to pony up. And I was talking to an EC official.
Pony up.
Yeah. And we were talking about the fact that there's right now, if you think about it, Kyle, there's four buckets right now at ECU. Okay. You have season tickets, you have Pirate Club, you have Pirates Unite, and you have Boneyard. So for me, you know, I have season tickets in every the three sports. We have Pirates Unite going on. I gave a major gift, not bragging about that, for baseball, but I want to see that done, and I can make that happen. You can take for Pirates Unite, by the way, folks, for the indoor practice facility in baseball, we've got to have, I've already given 1,000 each for both indoor practice facility and for baseball, not because I'm trying to brag, but because we've got to make this happen. It's like the more that we are kind of like,
yeah, and Dave, just to make this easier for the Pirates Unite thing, just go to Pirate Club's website, click on the Pirates Unite tab, and you can give a one-time gift. You don't have to sign up for monthly. If you want to give $20, you can earmark that $20 to go 100% to the indoor practice facility or to baseball or whatever you want it to go towards. I've given two gifts to the indoor practice facility and plan to give more. And you know, it all adds up. So give what you got. You got an extra $40 laying around that you, hey, you know, I gotta, you know, whatever, $100, $1,000, like Dave did, whatever you can afford, give it. I mean, especially with the Pirates Unite thing, it's just so easy to donate. You can earmark what it's for. Give something this month. Give a little more next month.
Right.
It all adds up. I mean, don't sit there and go, well, I can't afford to give $5,000, so I'm not going to donate. Look, if you can give $20 this month, $50 next month, $5, or hell, maybe you can only give $20 one time. If everybody would do that, we'd get to where we want to be.
Yeah, Bubba, he has the numbers, but we have over Kenneth, and it says maybe UBA, for example, could ask you when you pay if you want to donate $1 to $5 a team Boneyard.
Just that an idea is to get a revenue. Fantastic.
That's
idea.
A great idea, Kenneth. That thank is a you.
Fantastic idea, and that money would come from UBE. And so they would be, you know, and go to Team Boneyard. And so that is a really good idea, actually. You need to run that by the people at UBE.
And how about if we have that for not only UBE, but well, maybe UBE, because obviously we think a lot of the folks there, University Book Exchange. Well, but maybe there's some Pirate support, Pirates. Maybe there's different places, a handful of places that around Greenville that would do that. That's part of the Pirate Club, but certainly UBE is way up there for all the money they've given.
And NIL is a little tricky. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if there's certain rules, well, maybe that couldn't be done, but you could certainly, I could think of no reason why you couldn't do that for Pirates Unite. Hey,
that's what Pirates, you want to do?
Yep. So you do it for Pirates Unite.
You could extend that to any companies to support the Pirates.
Yeah,
Craig, great minds think alike, Craig. You, me, and Kyle, and
that right there. You know, why are we sitting here thinking of this stuff? And who's to say it hasn't been thought of, but it just hasn't been implemented yet? But you know, we're sitting here on a podcast. People are commenting. You know, and we're coming up with great ideas, and that's what it takes. And I'm not knocking John Gilbert, but that's why a man like Terry Holland would listen to everybody's idea. He would turn over every stone.
Yep.
You could be, you know. It didn't matter what your background was. He would listen to your idea, and if he thought it was a good idea, by God, he would try to implement it. And that is a great idea. And UBE or other businesses around Greenville and Eastern North Carolina, that's a brilliant idea, as a matter of fact. Who was it that said that to begin with?
Kenneth Maynor. Kenneth is one of our new viewers, or I haven't seen. He hasn't been.
Yeah,
been making a lot of great comments.
Kenneth, yeah, you stick around, my friend. You're pretty knowledgeable there. I really like that idea, and I would suggest, Kenneth, that you send an email to John Gilbert and Ryan Robinson.
That's a great idea.
And contact the people at UBE. Go ahead and sometimes, hey, you maybe you should contact the people at UBE, bring it to their attention, and they can propose it to East Carolina.
Think about that. How many times have you gone to a fast food place and they say, would you like to round up the, you know, your order to the next dollar? So if it's $12.53, you can round it up to $13. Or would you like to give a dollar to St. Jude's? Or there's a lot of great charities like St. Jude's out there that I give. I don't even know how many dollars I give like that for their.
We are partners in Hope St. Jude's. But I'll tell you the one that always cracks me up is every time I go to Ollie's in Goldsboro. I'm sure you're familiar with Ollie's Bar.
Oh, yeah.
There's one in Greenville. They're always taking up money for the Cal Ripken Jr. Foundation. So it always, it always cracks me up a little bit for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I always think of all, nothing wrong with it. I don't even know what they do. I'm assuming it's like something along with baseball related for inner city children is what my assumption is. But, anyway, that's neither here nor there, but no, great idea by Kenneth. That is one of the better ideas I've seen proposed by anybody recently, and that definitely needs to be brought to the attention of our university.
You were talking about Team Boneyard, but you also mentioned
Pirates Unite.
Pirates Unite, because when we're talking about the indoor practice facility, and you made a great point, Kyle, when you have...
Yeah, you could just simply do it for both. Hey, would you like to give $1 to Pirates Unite or to Team Boneyard? And sure, okay, which one or both?
Yep, $1 each, or one or the other, yeah.
Or round up, like you said. Would you like to round up your purchase to the nearest dollar and give that to Team Boneyard or Pirates Unite? I mean, that is a tremendous idea.
Yeah, in fact, how about this? Kenneth says a lot of businesses here in Fayetteville do it for the military and veteran related causes. Absolutely, Kenneth, and appreciate you there in Cumberland County, and love that. Era, I love Fayetteville for a lot of, I won't get off on a tangent here, Kyle, but all the wrestling, all the great wrestling there in the Fayetteville area over the years growing up, the Cumberland County Civic Center, or the auditorium there was
tremendous. Yeah, not the Greensboro Coliseum, but it certainly had its moments down there for sure.
No doubt.
I would that definitely needs, to be brought to the attention of John Gilbert, Rod Robinson, Hank Hinton, Scott Shook, a lot of people. That's a great idea by Kenneth.
And people listen and watch our podcast or watch our show, so that'll get back to them, I'm sure, because we get in trouble a lot of times when we say things or don't say things. But I just, when we have a great idea, Kenneth, that's fantastic. I appreciate
it. Well, if people would listen to our criticisms, it's always because we want what's best for East Carolina.
Correct.
We're not bashing people. When we're mad about something and being critical, it is for a reason. So if people can get butt hurt if they want, but, you know, look, no disrespect to John Gilbert, no disrespect to Ryan Robinson, they are not going to always be Pirates.
Correct.
We will. So, John, I'll just leave that there.
Yeah, and the fact is we're trying to make things better. And by the way, we have got to go ahead, and we need $6 million between now and the end of the year. Let's go ahead and raise as much money as we can, because guess what? I'm talking about for the indoor practice facility. We are so close to the baseball expansion to be breaking ground. I gave a big donation, and the reason I did is because I'm trying to get some momentum. Guys, we need $3 to $4 million in that range, and if we have every Pirate Club member give $500, okay, every member give $500, and you give it over a period of time, say you give it over a year or a couple years or a few years, if everybody would do that, guess what? We can break ground on that baseball expansion. It's very close. Now, the indoor practice facility, Kyle, you brought up on our last show that we did as far as
the sports. There's a group of people that are trying to maybe rush construction along on that to go ahead and build a usable shell, and not just a shell, not meaning just the
right,
the
a structure. Picnic shelter.
Yeah, but build it, the structure, the field lights, the air, the heat, and the outside where it's usable, but all the extra bells and whistles get added later. And I think that's a good idea, because the longer you go to wait to build it, the more construction is going to go up.
It's going to be more expensive.
Once it's built, we can use it. And all the extra amenities, we can add a little at a time.
And that's something I told you about, Kyle, is that once we're done with the indoor practice facility anyway, I want to see some new coaches' offices, a whole bunch of stuff like that, player amenities like we were talking about years ago when we first started the show. And then, you know, we have a great press box, but we put a lot of money there when a lot of people wanted to see the amenities. But I think that, in other words, Pirates Unite is not going away, folks. I know this for a fact. I've talked to, I don't even know if I told you, Kyle, but two or three sources inside the administration that confirmed with me that once we're done with the $60 million, don't worry, Dave, we're going to continue to, you know, like raise money, because we don't have a choice. If we want to, again, if we want to be in a power league, the way we're going to do that is we've got to find a way to continue to build these facilities. And it's a tough sell. It is a tough sell when you have NIL. But I told you, Kyle, there's a lot of people that they don't want to do the NIL thing. Okay, great. Give more money to Pirates Unite. We can have, if we have to have two different armies, two different camps, whatever on that, fine. However it gets done, I don't care. But we're going to have to raise in the neighborhood of $200 or $300 million. You look at Memphis and look at Memphis and USF. That they're raising anywhere, what, 200, 250, 250 million. I mean, I know that like USF has to have they're building a new stadium. So that's a good portion of it, but we're going to have to, I just want to let everybody know, don't feel overwhelmed by the 60 million, because in reality, it's more like 200 or 300 million to keep par really with the American schools, I would think.
Yeah. Some of them, a lot of American schools that are going to have to be catching up to even get to our level, honestly. But anyway, I've been doing a podcast
online, I know, for a long time.
But quickly, week zero games this week, standout games, Ohio, San Diego State should be a good one. Notre Dame, Navy.
That's the one I was going to say.
Probably not going to be a good game, but obviously marquee matchup with Notre Dame. Probably blow out Navy. Ohio San Diego State will be a good one. A couple other potentially good games. If you can get past who's playing in the games, just want to watch good football. FIU was surprisingly competitive last year. This will be year number two for their head coach. They take on Louisiana Tech. That could be a good one. And UMass and New Mexico State also has a chance to be a pretty good football game. Also, USC plays this weekend. Jacksonville State makes their FBS debut against UTEP. So there's seven games, and I plan on watching all seven of them.
Yeah, in fact, don't forget that we have for you tomorrow night, the Inside Slant, as we're going to take a look at those games. So I appreciate you talking about that. Kyle, we'll be talking about the college football tomorrow night. I believe that's at 8 or 8:30, 8:30, I believe, but certainly tomorrow night. And we look forward, and that's being Thursday night if you're watching on archives. So make sure you check that out. Looking forward to everybody being a part of that. And a lot of 8:30, as our good friend Bubba Rosenbaum said, thank you so much for producing. So the Inside Slant is tomorrow night, 8:30. Don't forget, by the way, some programming notes real quick. On Friday night, we'll have our second game for Martin County football. I appreciate Kyle and Bubba and Matt Semenza letting me be a part to put this venture of the project, if you will, on our platform. We've got Aiden Grifton. I know Bubba talked to Coach Cornwell, Paul Cornwell, today for Aiden Grifton, and I'm actually recording an interview with Coach Sartain tomorrow on Thursday, and we'll have that in our pregame. Looking forward to that as myself, Harold Robinson, Charles Smith, who's going to be our on-site engineer. I know Bubba, Kyle, and Matt also can chime in. By the way, that's Friday night starting at 6:40. We want to mention on the Inside Slant, tomorrow night we'll have Pete Medhurst of Navy, and of course, Rennie Angolia also. That'll be tomorrow night for the Inside Slant, and looking forward to doing that. Martin County won the JV game. I didn't know that. Thank you very much, Justin. 16-8. So I know you were a referee in that game, and appreciate you doing that, Justin. I know that's not an easy thing, and they need a lot of referees right now. So not only your referee, but also your umpire in baseball. So you're awesome, and appreciate your contributions always to the show. All right, Kyle, do you have anything before we get out of here?
Not a thing.
All right, appreciate you, Iron Man, appreciate all that you do for the show. Thank you, Bubba, behind the scenes. Again, we'll be back tomorrow night at 8:30. For the Inside Slant right here, inside look at all the college football games for week zero and beyond. Until next time, this is Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective for all about everybody here. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates. Team knows that we got they back. This is our house, this is our town, our top.
but why not copy that? Everybody gonna see us go bananas, scream loud, baby, don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get it all, get the wave going like the hurricane, y'all.